Dr. Catanella, thank you so much for joining us. I'd like to start off and talk about how COVID-19 affects people who have diabetes. Obviously, a lot of folks may be familiar with the number of people who have diabetes in El Paso. It's high compared to the rest of the country. But could you share how COVID-19 impacts folks who have diabetes?
Certainly, and thank you for having me. These are challenging times, and there's a lot to learn, and I'm glad to be able to try to help debunk any kind of misinformation that's out there. Certainly, diabetes is a very important chronic medical problem, and it is one, as you pointed out, that affects a large number of El Pasoans. The key thing for people, I think, to understand, it's not just the diabetes. Diabetes certainly is a chronic problem, but obesity is a chronic problem, and a lot more people in El Paso suffer from obesity than they do specifically diabetes. And then in addition, high blood pressure is another component, and all three of those conditions, diabetes, obesity, and high blood pressure, have all been found to be significant risks when people become infected with the COVID virus. So it's not necessarily that they're more likely to get infected, but once they get infected, they are at higher risk of severe and bad outcomes. So that's the most important thing that we have to pay attention to. And what we also know is that the worse that these conditions are in the individual, meaning that the more uncontrolled their blood sugars, the more uncontrolled their blood pressure, the more likely that they're going to have more difficult or bad outcomes. And so it becomes very important for people to understand how to control their blood pressure and control their diabetes.
What is it about the virus that truly attacks the body that really makes folks facing those things have such a tough time?
Well, it's actually a little bit different. It's not so much what the virus does as much as it is what obesity and diabetes have in play. And what you have to think about is this word that we call inflammation. Now, inflammation is a very important safety mechanism for our body. It's a coordinated response, usually set off when there's a harmful stimuli such as a germ, bacteria, and the goal of the inflammatory process is to get rid of the harm and restore the body to normal baseline, normal activity levels. So the great example is strep throat. You get exposed to the strep organism, you start to develop pain, fever, all of those are kind of signs of inflammation. And then you go to the doctor, we give you the antibiotic, and you get better, and the body's restoring back to its normal state. So that's sort of a normal inflammatory reaction to things. What happens in people with chronic obesity in particular is that over time, as more and more fat accumulates, not just in the fat cells, but also starts to get into the liver, into the muscle cells, there's a change in the body's chemistries, and what happens is the inflammatory state that normally wouldn't be there is now deregulated, and there's this low-grade chronic inflammatory state that develops, and then if people have diabetes, that sort of amplifies that chronic low-level inflammatory state. And what happens in this scenario is blood vessels can get damaged. The cells that normally attack germs aren't as coordinated as they normally would be. And people are a little bit more prone to, say, developing blood clots. And this is one reason why people with diabetes and obesity have such higher risks of blindness, heart attacks, stroke, kidney damage, and amputation. And so when you have that background going on in people and then you get the virus, one of the things that this virus does is generate what we call a cytokine storm. And this is, again, the body is going to do everything it can to get rid of this virus, and so it amplifies up this inflammatory process to get rid of this thing, but it the virus causes it to happen in a more, even more uncoordinated way. And so what happens is with people with diabetes or obesity, they already have a dysregulated system. And then when they get hit with a virus that's trying to do more dysregulation, it creates a lot more chaos in the inflammatory states of the body, making more damage likely and harder to treat.
What type of diabetes seems to be the most common in our region?
It's type 2, which is mostly what we see across the world. And the differences that we call between type 1 and type 2 is this. In type 1 diabetes, the pancreas, the organ that secretes insulin, is damaged. And as a result, there is no insulin production. Now, insulin is a very, very important chemical. The best way to think of this is that every cell of your body needs three things. It needs water, it needs food, and it needs oxygen, right? Every cell needs those three things, whether it's a brain cell, a heart cell, a muscle cell, in order to survive, live, and function. Now, oxygen and water are very, very tiny, tiny atoms, and so it's very easy for those to just diffuse in and out of cells. But the food of the cells is a glucose molecule, which in comparison is humongous. And so evolution over time developed a mechanism that we call a receptor, and you can think of that as a door. And so the cell door is shut most of the time, but then the cell sends out a signal saying, gee, I need some food. And then insulin comes along to the cell as the key, opens up the door, and the glucose molecule is pulled into the cell. So your bloodstream can have a lot of glucose available, but it's not unless insulin is there to open up that receptor site that the cells actually get fed. So in type 1 diabetes, what happens is the insulin is no longer being produced. And so the cells might be screaming to the brain and the pancreas for insulin to come by, but the pancreas can't do it because it's no longer able to function. So that's type 1 diabetes. In type 2 diabetes, it's a very different scenario. Here earlier on, something both environmental and genetic comes along, and there's a damaging to the production of the cell's receptors or the insulin molecule. So think of it this way. If something happens to the lock, it gets jammed, it's harder for the key, even though it's the right key, it's harder for that key to open up that door and allow the cell to be fed. Likewise, if the key is broken or not working or the lock is broken, you get the same effect. So what happens is there's this damaging relationship early on, and the brain is getting all these signals from the cell saying, gee, we're starving, we need to be fed. The brain tells the pancreas, hey, open up and send out some more insulin. The pancreas says, well, I am creating insulin. So the brain goes, well, not enough. And so the pancreas says, okay. So early on in type 2 diabetes, there's actually an excess of insulin because the pancreas is trying to respond to this situation. Now, if that maintains itself over a long period of time where the pancreas is pumping out large amounts of insulin, over time, it may burn out. And so ultimately, every type 2 diabetic has the potential for turning into a type 1 diabetic. And that excess insulin in diabetes, particularly in type 2, is also another situation of this chronic inflammatory problem, and it has its own toxins that get developed. And that's why we try so hard to get our diabetic patients to maintain their glucose levels in the target ranges.
What does research show us that seems to be the greatest contributors for type 2 diabetes in our region?
Probably obesity itself is the number one factor. You know, we're learning so much more about obesity itself and sort of its role as a chronic inflammatory state. There's definitely a genetic component. But if people maintain their weight in a proper balance, it's not enough for the genetic component alone. It usually takes some sort of environmental factor, which is the excess weight, before something really triggers it. So I would say that the most important factor in preventing diabetes is people maintaining an appropriate and healthy diet, weight, and physical activity.
If you have type 2 diabetes, if you change your lifestyle through activity or your diet, is there a way to reverse the process?
I would say that it's not so much reverse the process as much as control the process. And that's the key thing. It is a chronic condition. It's not necessarily curable, but it's treatable. And so a lot of people, if they maintain their weight, they may not necessarily need medications or need far less medication. But if they continue to gain weight or not be physically active or really not maintain a good healthy lifestyle and everything gets worse over time, then they're more likely to develop those complications.
When COVID-19 first was reported in the U.S., we didn't have as great an understanding as we did right now and the way it was transferred. As we are finding out more things about this virus, what are some things that folks can really do right now to take precautions and avoid being exposed?
I'm glad you asked that question. Thank you. So the three things are really the most important ones. There's really very good data now that maintaining a certain amount of distance between people has a huge impact on protection. And, that 6-foot mark that we talk about has really been shown to be effective in reducing people's chance of getting exposed. The second thing, of course, is masks. So wearing some type of mask is a way of helping to reduce the spread of the droplets. So if I wear a mask, I'm protecting all the people that may be around me. And if everyone is wearing a mask, then we're all protecting each other. And then the third thing I would recommend highly is very frequent hand washing. A good 20-second hand wash with soap and water is a very good way of also keeping yourself safe. So those are the three most important things that I think people can do in general to reduce their risk of becoming infected.
Health officials in the area, it's been reported by local media, have said that they are starting to see more patients come in with more serious conditions. What is this telling you?
Well, the most important thing it's telling me is that, one, we have a lot of folks who may have been putting off the treatment of their underlying conditions, and then with some relaxation of things, people may not have been doing the social distancing, wearing the masks, or their hand washing. And so, again, what we've are seeing is a consequence of our choices. For a while there, when people were doing stay at home, my fear and a lot of the doctor's concerns was people weren't coming or getting contact with physicians regarding their underlying conditions. And, we were no longer seeing people come to the emergency room for their out-of-control blood pressure, for their heart disease or other chronic problems. And our concern is that it was just getting worse over time, but people were afraid to go to see the physician. And so now we may be seeing the consequences of that kind of situation.
So if somebody is in that situation where they may be dealing with out-of-control blood pressure or another health issue, what do they need to do?
That's a very important point. So number one is people should not completely postpone treatment or things. They need to maintain very good communication with their physician. They shouldn't cancel their checkups. They shouldn't avoid contacting their doctors, their family physician, their internist, and if you have diabetes, your endocrinologist. Nowadays, many of us are, like we are here at Texas Tech Physicians, we're doing telemedicine visits. We're also doing office visits. We have ways now where we're screening people to make sure that it is safe to come into the office building. So maintaining that communication, making sure that you're communicating that things are going. And so along that line, particularly for people with diabetes, what I would absolutely recommend is do your checking of your glucose levels at home. Monitor those carefully. If you notice that they're worsening, that's an indication that you absolutely need to contact your physician to see things. There are certain medications that type 2 diabetics are often placed on, medicines like Jardiance, Invokana, or some of their derivatives. If they're on those medications and they're feeling ill or sick, it's extremely important that they contact their doctor, because these medications, when people are ill, can sometimes cause a complication known as diabetic ketoacidosis. So very important, if you're on those types of medications, that you, if you're feeling sick, to let your doctor know. Other things that I would highly recommend is maintain a very good nutritional diet. And even if you are stay at home, there's a lot of exercising or physical activity that you could do. For example, one of the things I try to tell people, if you're watching television, you know, every commercial, get up and do laps around the chair or the couch or whatever it is. Don't just stay seated all that time. So maintain the diet and exercise are very important. Make sure you have adequate medications and supplies to be able to take care of your diabetes. And then do not skip any of your medications. People need to maintain taking them, and if they're concerned, then again, then that's why they need to contact their physician and discuss what the issues are. I mentioned about if, you know, they're starting to feel ill or sick, make sure you contact the physician. And then if you're developing particularly nausea or vomiting, or you're not able to take adequate food or fluids, it's extremely important that your doctor know, because, again, people could be at risk for developing a ketoacidosis, which could be a medical emergency. And then finally, I think people should be very aware of what the symptoms of the COVID virus are. And so fever, new cough, shortness of breath, unexplained drowsiness, chest pain, weakness to an arm or leg, visual confusion, loss of smell or taste, and potentially diarrhea. These are symptoms that, again, you want to make sure you keep your physician well informed about so that you can get the best advice.
Who should get tested for COVID-19 right now?
You know, right now, I think the most important thing is people with symptoms. For people who have symptoms, particularly if they have the diabetes, if they have obesity, if they have high blood pressure, extremely important that we know whether or not that they're at risk. The data is pretty clear that the most people that have the virus are in their 20s to 40s, but the people that are having the severe illness are people that are in their 50s and older. Particularly, every decade, the risks get higher, and the group that's in their 80s and above, they represent the highest level of mortality and infection from the virus. So, I think right now we really want to make sure that people with these chronic conditions, if they're getting any of these symptoms, we need to test them right away.
Dr. Anthony Catanella is the chair of the Department of Family Medicine at Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso Trans Mountain. Thank you so much for joining us.
My real pleasure. Thank you for having me.